Public Works Committee meeting, Tuesday, November 19th, 24. Order, we have Alderman Cornelius, Alderman Koch, Alderman Marcus Rowe, and we have Alderman Funkhauser present, and Alderman Spalding is absent. We have city staff present. I'll move on to city comments. I don't see anything anywhere.
No, nobody.
Okay, good. Minutes for correction slash approval for October 15th, 2024. Oh, good. Matt, good? Okay. Take them as approved. New business. Item one, PW 2024-94, Kennedy Roadway Improvements Phase 1 Engineering Agreement.
Okay, so this is for a Phase 1 Engineering Agreement for Kennedy Road surface improvements related to an upcoming project that we previously budgeted to include in fiscal year 28 at 100% city cost. So we did receive, or we anticipate receiving, just over $2 million from the King County Council of Mayors and put on a contingency list for this grant, which means as other projects are completed or get delayed, you know, they may call on us and say, hey, we're ready for you. Here's your grant funding. Please complete the project. In order to do that, we need to move forward with the phase one design engineering so that the plans are ready to go in case that call comes. Either now or a couple of years from now. And so EEI has prepared the contract for us to review tonight. And it's for $324,000 and change. We do anticipate the expenditures being split between the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year. We do have enough money in this fiscal year to cover all the expenditures related to the contract. The total value of the contract at $324,000 or so is more than what we had budgeted in full between the two fiscal years at $250,000. But that can easily be rectified next year just through you know, our proposed budget, increasing the cost along the way. And so for that reason, we do recommend approval. There is an email in the packet from Brad that just kind of goes through, you know, the additional things that IDOT is requiring that has driven up the cost from their original estimate. And I'm sure he can answer questions if anybody has any about those. Otherwise, we can take questions about the project or the contract.
Did you want to add?
Yeah, so this is a you know, STP funded project, so you have to go through the detailed phase one and phase two engineering. So phase one is spelled out by IDOT on exactly what's necessary, a lot of environmental sign-offs, a lot of capacity analysis, things such as that, looking at different improvements. So yeah, just originally we just didn't budget enough for it back a couple years ago when we first initially looked at it. And then once we started crunching
recording
numbers,
in progress,
we you know, had to adjust the numbers up to cover all the anticipated items that IDOT would be receiving. So this is for a potential reconstruction and widening of Kennedy Road. You know, so a significant stretch of road.
The hallway?
It would be from basically the end of Autumn Creek to
Freedom.
Freedom. Yeah, Freedom.
By the golf course.
So around the curves, the intersection at Bristol Ridge, all that would be included as part of it.
And I just wanted a quick question here. So this is for a grant, right? So when do we know about the grant, if we got it or not?
It's pretty,
You think we got
yeah,
it?
That's it's pretty well guaranteed.
It's a matter of time. Yeah. Okay, I just didn't know. You guys sound pretty positive that we had the grant.
Yes.
And then what I was going to ask, what happens if we didn't?
Okay. Well, we still are planning to do the project in a few years anyway with grant reserve fees. So worst case scenario, if we don't get it for some reason, we'll just, you know, move forward with 100% local funding.
Question? Is there the engineering a kind of shelf life to it, or is it good for 5 years?
Yeah, so right now it's potentially the construction is funded for 2028. So these phase ones, unfortunately, they take like 12 to 18 months to get through IDOT and get through approval. So, you know, once you get through that, then you actually do have to do the phase two design, the detailed design. So typically these STP projects, they don't move fast through the IDOT system and they take like 5 years to work through. To get to construction, so they'll certainly last through that. So the great news is you got federal funding, but it's painful and it's expensive on the engineering side just to meet all of the
questions?
No questions.
Chris?
Obviously, there's the western part of Kennedy is urban cross-section. Is this going to be a combination of urban and rural based on the existing, you know, once you get around the golf course, those county homes?
Yeah.
What's the plan?
Yeah, I think our initial thinking was it would stay urban up to, you know, maybe Bristol Ridge and then change to,
transition
to rural after that.
Okay.
And then we'll have to look at the curves. You know, those curves certainly don't meet design standards. They're unsafe, so there's going to be a lot of back and forth.
So at the curve by the golf course?
Yeah, there's like two curves, right? There's been a a death in the past on those curves, so we anticipate having to run multiple scenarios to satisfy FHWA and IDOT on meeting current safety standards. So
how will you get that? One's kind of tight, isn't it? Between the golf course and the house?
We're limited on softening the curves because then that would take additional right away, potentially from people. So there's limitations on what we can do, but we know they're going to ask, for us to take a look at a number of different things.
And I believe we do have a little bit of right away on the Grand Reserve site to work with.
Yes.
Yeah. So we can go that way to soften them a little bit, to kind of elongate them.
And with that, a lot of times these three-lane cross-section roads are 45 miles an hour. Can we look at the speed on the road in order to mitigate some of that?
That might be part of the ultimate solution, yes. Yep.
And then I know putting in the curbs has a whole add of, most of the time when we're putting the curbs in, we've got storm sewer that we're adding to that.
Correct.
If we're doing a ditch, it's not quite as expensive with the infrastructure.
Right.
Obviously, there are other factors, but
yes.
I'd be more inclined to keep it rural. Like you said, Bristol Ridge moving on as far as we can, so it makes sense.
Sorry, Chris?
Yeah, that's it.
How does this line up with the intersection improvements on Kennedy and Freedom?
Yeah, so it would connect into that ultimately. So,
are they going to be completed around the same time? Or?
No, we need to acquire the right of way yet, but we're still hoping to complete that next summer. That's still the goal next year. And then for this particular project, those improvements are just above up next to match right into.
So, no movement on the right of way then?
There's movement with the attorney maybe, and we have an appraisal done, but so we're working back and forth with the attorney. Our attorney on our side,
and they're still sort of tracking their feet, unresponsive.
There hasn't been an official offer made yet to them, so trying to work through that.
So they had trouble communicating.
At that point, they dropped off from all discussions, and we have not talked to them since then. So we're still preparing our first offer back to them. So what do we need to do with this one, Bart? It goes to the regular city council. Probably I'll put it in the regular agenda.
Sure.
In case there's any other questions. Okay, item 2, PW 2024-95, 2024 water main replacement contract B, change order number 1.
All right, for contract B, we're at a point to do the balancing change order. So we typically bring these forth in front of the committee and the council, and in this case, a pretty significant decrease in the overall contract, a little bit over $145,000. So we're certainly recommending approval of the change order.
Any questions? Matt?
No questions.
Chris? You guys want consent for change order?
Good.
What do you think?
It's a decrease.
Sounds good.
Okay. We'll put that one on. I mean, everything will read it off anyhow, so. Item 3, PW 2024-96, roadway improvement plans, alignment and location update. This is Beecher Road, Maxon Road, and Cornelius Road.
Yeah, we have a memo in the packet and an exhibit. Probably, if you want to follow the exhibit, it's probably the best way to walk through some things, but described several elements within the memo. But I believe Alderman Funkhauser had asked just for some commentary, kind of where things are at from a planning perspective. So we've been taking a look at this area a little bit as potential developments have been coming to the city and talking to us about various planning aspects. So at least at the moment, this is our current thinking within the packet. So maybe just starting with Beecher, not down to the south of the railroad track. So you know, Beecher has long been planned to align with Beecher to the north, you know, just south of the railroad tracks there. So right now, that's still, you know, the best alternative from our perspective, and at least initially we were thinking that everything south of the railroad tracks be that urban cross-section. It's currently urban, as it's constructed nearby Target, and we would just continue that basically up to the railroad tracks. And then continuing north on Beecher, you know, thinking it would more transition to a rural section, and then carry you know, improvements all the way up to Corn Mills Road. So at this point, you know, Cyrus One has committed to reconstruct Beecher across their frontage, so designated as number three on the map, and you know, the rest of it is all to be determined. You know, potentially, you know, funded by developers. There may be sections that, you know, from a timing perspective, you know, you might not have development, so therefore the city may choose to invest in that, all yet to be determined. So I don't know if we want to go through all of them first or just touch base on each road as we go. I don't know if Chris, do you have a preference?
If you want to just kind of hit the highlights.
Yeah. Okay. And then Faxon Road, just touching base on that a little bit. So yeah, off to the west by Cyrus One. Cyrus One committed to reconstruct that roadway. That's planned to be a rural section, so you know, with ditch drainage. And then that would not have a railroad crossing. And basically, as we move further to the east, we would also anticipate that's probably going to end at Beecher Road as well. So it'd be just a T intersection north-south of Beecher and then continuing to the east with Faxon. And the rest of Faxon Road there probably looking like an urban section, and that would certainly probably make sense. And then there would be a reconstruction of the culvert or bridge structure there as well. Then Corneal's to the north, you know, that would be all ditch drainage, so that would be a rural section. Bright Farms has reconstructed a small portion of that to give you a flavor of what it would look like, and they have the responsibility across their frontage to complete the rest of the work, and then the remainder, you know, to be determined based on timing and development, but certainly, you know, needs to be improved across the board. Then, you know, there's a goofy little S-curve just by Roderick Creek there on Corneal's. That would all be softened and, you know, designed to appropriate standards. So we have not looked at anything north at this point, even though, well, we certainly have some folks talking to us. That's more probably dependent on land planning that potentially could come in. You know, we've had some different high-level discussions, but you know, nothing to put on paper until we have some more formal discussions with development at this point. So very high-level overview. And, yeah, certainly looking for comments or questions.
Two things I want to just highlight here. Okay, since there are going to be policy decisions that will be impacted with developments, and then our decision will absolutely impact those developments. The first is Faxon Road. You know, Brad mentioned here, this currently does not go across the railroad tracks. Used to 30 years ago.
Probably 40, almost 50.
Okay, 50 years ago. None of the planning documents and comments that we've given developers have concluded that this would be reopened at any point. So if, you know, if everybody says, hey, you know, we want to revisit that, talk about opening that up, that would require a fair amount of effort and cost on our part. But it would be appropriate to do so now. So that's one topic. Second topic, which is going to come to a head here with the Daniels property, which is applied for annexation and rezoning for data centers, so it's basically this brown property here, is the alignment of Beecher Road. So there is really not a way to swing east Beecher Road to the east. This option one here, swinging straight south, goes through an existing farmstead that would have to be either acquired by a data center company or the city in order to do that. And then the other option is to swing it west and then connect with Beecher Road down here. So this obviously is the path of least resistance currently because it doesn't involve taking off this homestead. But if the person decides to leave or to sell, you know, that could be an option there too. That's something the data center companies and developers will have to wrestle with, you know, when they're acquiring parcels in this area. So we have had, as part of our planning discussions, conversations with a couple of the residents here, and they've all received public notice for the Daniels property, you know, about these two alignments here. And so, you know, in a nutshell, what you've got here is option one puts the roadway closer to everybody's home, but there's little to no chance there will be a data center in this little pie slice here between the roadway and the homes, which is probably good. So this other option gets the roadway further away, so hopefully that's a little bit less traffic noise, obviously, but it poses the possibility that you could have a data center building, you know, in between the homes and the roadway here. And so the resident that lives on the end here, and I don't know if the person that's attended here is that person, but has let us know that they would prefer option 1A, option 1, which keeps the roadway closer to their home and gives them no chance that there's a data center immediately adjacent to their properties. You know, as we've already talked about in the past, data center noise from HVAC units, generators and stuff, isn't frequent in that they don't run all the time or have issues with noise all the time. But, you know, you have to test generators once a month, HVAC systems go bad every once in a while, so that can be a nuisance from time to time. So we're trying to keep data center buildings and their outdoor equipment, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of feet away from residents and then buffered in a way such that, you know, noise can be reflected off of buildings to the west instead of, you know, to our residents on the east. So those are the things that we kind of need some feedback on, you know, now. Not a final answer per se, but, you know, some concurrence here or some, you know, general thoughts that maybe we can forward them over.
Who wants to go first? Rusty?
Sort of clear with option one. With the path anyhow.
Sure.
That makes our residents more happy.
Good.
I was kind of leaning that way too, I think.
Okay.
I don't know if they would really try to squeeze a data center on the second option either, though. That seems like, and maybe it's misleading to me, but it seems like a smaller chunk for trying to put a building in there.
I have not mapped it out myself, but I have been told from different developers that then there's possibility that you can put one there. I don't know if it would be a full-size building or not, but it is possible.
Then maybe you're right, one's better. Helps the best with that.
Okay.
Matt?
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys.
Good. Chris?
Yeah, I think there's an option between 1 and 1A. Yeah.
Sure.
Snug across the west property line of the, it's actually, well, the little triangle that's there because you got the Fortalenza. And then there's a little triangle to the west
sure.
of that.
Yep.
Snug right up against that. And I think we can pull that in closer. I don't like the 1A the way it jogs, but I think we have an option there. I agree we need to keep it close, but not too close.
Okay.
You know, 300 feet, 400 feet separation, because that gives you a nice buffer between a four-lane cross-section that's going to produce quite a bit of noise out there.
What is the current, right
current
now?
Cross-section?
Well, no, the distance. Because you said what?
Oh.
No, the distance you're talking about, Chris. The three.
I'd like it to be about, you know, 300-400 feet.
What is it proposed now if we went with one?
One? I would say that that's about probably to the center lane. 200. 16, 24, yeah.
Each one of those little lots is usually 80 or 85 foot.
Yeah.
You see it on there. So
that's what I'm looking at. So kind of right in the right on the west side of that blue line is where I think the center line would work. But then we do have the pocket between the Billy McHugh homes in Highlands Ridge. So that's the back pocket here is my concern, what gets done in there. Mm-hmm. To me, that's an exclusion zone for data centers or industrial manufacturing. That's a no-go for me, putting that anything of that type of use in that pocket of space right there. No.
That zone residential now?
It's unincorporated. Okay. That was not brought in.
Okay.
So a corner of it was brought in. Actually, no, we didn't bring any of that under the Kalaka. Or did we bring the Eastern?
I think there's a current application that's just coming in.
Yeah.
That's
what. Because I'm looking at the boundaries here, I think the boundaries are not right. But yeah, we brought in everything west of the creek,
correct,
the Kalaka, not the east piece. And then there's another piece that goes right up to Highlands Ridge. So there's two parcels.
Yeah, so Hammond is kept at east of the creek, and I believe you just made an application recently.
Right, and it's the piece that snugs right up in there, is that kind of rectangular vertical.
Yeah, it's there.
That's the one.
It's kind of south of the two a little bit.
Yeah, keep that piece out of there, and then whatever triangle where the number one is shown out there, keep that triangle out of industrial manufacturing. Now, there's potential. This area is good for stormwater. There's a lot. This is a pretty flat area. You see the floodplain is through there. So, trying to find a good place to put this road through makes sense to push that out. Where this is $6 million almost, just under a big chunk that potentially is paid for by developer improvements. So, that's, I like that. Now, when we talked about Faxon, this is the other key thing. Barty brought it up. Do we want to reconnect? I'm of mind we don't reconnect that.
You mean like over the train?
Over the train. So right now, Faxon is dead-ended at the train. It's actually dead-ended at the other end at Whispering Meadows. The intent is at the east end for Faxon to go all the way out to 47 at some point. Got some logistical issues with the back building. But if we don't reconnect it, then we end up with a dead end to a T intersection. It's basically, you know, instead of going to Eld Main, it goes to Beecher, which is going to be a four-lane cross section, major arterial through here, which I'd be okay with that.
I was just thinking also, how much does that cost to, if you connected it, to cross the train tracks? But that's a burden.
Well,
that's a big
one. You'd have to get permission
first,
which that's.
Right, it's going to be tough.
Difficult.
We'd be
it would be expensive,
off,
right?
Yeah, we'd be better off closing another intersection to try to get it done. But the fact that we've already approved Cyrus 1 and they're moving forward with plans, because we'd have to do a realignment of that crossing probably to get it at a better angle. So there's a lot of issues. That's why I'm inclined to keep this closed, you know, because then you actually create a more developable piece of property to the west of Beecher, kind of offsetting the losses on the other side of the realignment. Kind of a push-pull to make it more efficient and a little better back here.
So Faxon Road's now all your folks, not township anymore?
Correct, with the annexation of when this was first annexed.
Yeah.
Well, on the west side, let me on the west side, there's still a little piece. And there's still a little piece where that farmette is all the way to the west edge of Highlands. It's still unincorporated, partially.
And that one.
Because you have some of Whispering Meadows, you don't have some of Loftus. It's like a little jigsaw puzzle out there right now.
So there's parts that are right in that middle section that are not under our control.
Matt, thoughts on any of that?
Okay.
Did you have any thoughts or on that part? The crossing?
About Faxon remaining closed?
Yeah.
Yeah. My preference is that it remains closed there. That'd be true. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be the best. Unless there's somebody brought some reason why they would you want that. I don't know what that reason is. Well, you have no east-west main thoroughfares on that quadrant of town of the Cordial 34, which is a two-mile stretch.
I believe it's a two-mile stretch. Mm-hmm. I believe it's a mile to Faxon and a mile to Cordial.
So that's the only thing is you would say 100 years from now,
you know, would you be better off having a safety valve for those residents to be able to get west if they needed to versus having to go west and then north or south and then west again, that type of thing. But, I mean...
But it sounds like this is going to be developed for industrial, you know, like... I don't know if that's residential going in any of that, right?
Yeah. No, I would not anticipate any new residential in that entire quadrant.
So, yeah, your trips should be less. Your traffic should be less, certainly.
Is there any... Has anybody given a look at taking Faxon instead of terminating it where it is right now, bringing it along the south side of the creek and then running it out to Hoffman?
Can you point up there, Chris?
Yes. Yeah, we have.
Run it down and then bring it out.
It's something that we... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, that's something we have talked about, looked at, and you know, we're kind of waiting on an actual plan from the developer.
Okay.
I wouldn't rule that out as a potential, and we didn't want to show it because there's just a lot of feedback that we get at this point.
But regionally, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Than connecting it.
And there's another home and a wetland as a kind of a little obstacle.
Yes, so. there's two items, but I mean we're going through a farmstead here.
Understood.
Crossing. So yeah, I get at this point. To do that scenario, you're running through somebody's current development, but now is the time to have that conversation of, do we want a, like you said, relief valve that runs out there, avoiding the crossing? There's some benefit to how that might look. So, you know, who knows, maybe that's one way to approach that. And then we said everything north of the tracks is gonna be rural.
Yes.
And we feel that...
Roaming ditches, right?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
So Corneille's, North Fax, or North Beecher, going all the way up to Galena would probably all be rural in that area.
Yes.
Seems
to make sense, yeah.
Okay.
When you decide it's rural, is there specs for the ditches, like the construction of them and stuff, and rough idea what that is?
Yeah. In theory, you want to have a certain slope on your ditches so you don't have standing water. IDOT designs their ditches for like a 50-year storm event. You know, locally it's typically not that heavy, but it'll be a storm event that we'll want to design it to make sure we, you know, contain it within the ditch system. As things develop, they're all on-site stormwater retention and what have you. So typically the runoff is not coming to the roadways like it currently is. It's lessened. So, those are some of the standards.
How deep do they usually go?
You typically want to get your bottom of your ditch below like your pavement and your stone cross section. So typically it's 4 feet-ish. Because you don't want water sitting in the ditch, then getting into your stone base on your roadway, because that's when things go bad from a roadway perspective. So, you know, not unlike curb and gutter systems, you want to get the water away from the roadway and get it out of there efficiently. So you have maintain a roadway into the future. So, just a few more details to
I just didn't want, what I was thinking of is what we have on Fox Road, where the, you know, White Oak and River's Edge, and that seems like that's kind of a problem area.
It's a little better.
I don't want to create like this up there.
Right.
Yeah. No, I mean, you have back slopes you want to maintain, and we'll try to, you know, you want to have at least, you know, mobile slopes and things like that.
I don't think these will be near as big as those ditches. Those are very big.
Yeah. And those are old from older roads that, you know,
if you're
doing it with a modern design, they're going to be mobile, they'll be maintainable. Yeah. Those are remnant roads.
Yeah.
When we're the area north of Beecher, north of the Beecher, north of the railroad, rural cross section. But is that 2-lane, 3-lane, or to be determined? My thought is capacity on those roads. You think just 2?
For construction purposes, it's going to be your busiest time for this whole area.
Yeah.
Once these are up and running, they don't have many people.
Right.
So I think kind of narrowing it down as we go to the north into the heart of that is going to be okay. Maybe it slides north of Corneille's. Maybe Corneille's is the crossroad, but...
Because you think Corneille's is as well going to stay at 2-lane with the exception at Elden Lane.
Yes, because you have Galena right to the north.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're tentatively set up at, as 24 edge to edge, and then shoulders outside, so they're a very, you know, wider, safer roadway. I mean, you know, it's no different than like a county highway, for example. It's the same cross section. So, you know, a two-lane roadway, I mean, you know, roughly seven bad example, right? Now, but that, you know, that's taking like 25,000 cars a day.
Yeah.
So two-lane roadway can handle, you know, 10,000 cars a day easy, and you wouldn't even know it. So, and, you know, there's probably not going to be 10,000 cars a day on these roadways. You know, I can say that with, you know, almost certainty.
Hoping that's the case. Yeah. But what I see is this Beecher connection being a pretty substantial north-south corridor for
sure. Absolutely.
Absolutely, because once you go north, it is truly the halfway point from Haldimand to Route 47.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty direct point once we make the realignment on the north side. Regionally, that's a good cut. So.
As long as there's a traffic signal at Galena, if not, you're not going anywhere.
Well, the fact that it's going to be midpoint gives
Could.
Good confidence that that's where we want to go, if the county doesn't go.
Okay. Anybody else?
Did you get enough direction, Bert, Brad, and Eric?
Yes.
Yeah, very helpful comments.
Okay. So we don't have to have any kind of action on that just for you guys, right?
Correct.
Okay. Item 4, PW 2024-97-2024, Road to Better Roads, change in plans and final estimate.
Basically fancy words for a change order. That's what IDOT calls their balancing change order. We have to do two things, just typical paperwork on an MFT project. So yeah, we have to do the pay estimate, approve that, and then approve the request change in plans, which is essentially just a change order. So. Project came in, $12,000 and change, almost $13,000 under budget. So we are recommending approval of both.
Good, Matt. Good, Matt.
Good with it. Yeah.
Chris? Yeah, I'm good too. So that can go on consent too with the other change order. Item 5, PW 2024-98 meter changeout.
As part of our Lake Michigan allocation, we are required to get our 10% non-revenue, get down under 10% non-revenue water loss. And we think a key component of that is going to be changing out some of our old meters that may not be A, registering correctly, or B, reading correctly. We have been working towards this first part of this change out for quite a few years. Some of these meters were initially installed, I would say probably close to 20, 21 years ago. So they are past their life frame now, but we had so many of them we couldn't just replace them by ourselves, onesie, twosie. We need a full replacement. The walking route and the iTron meters are Foxhill, the big concentration of our walking route, the old downtown, and then the iTron meters are in Autumn Creek and Grand Reserve. And the iTron meters, we are to a point where they do not support the reading system anymore. We have an old program on our radio read laptop that if that goes down, we will physically have to go to every house to read the meter. They don't support the reading system anymore. So that one we've been working at trying to get those replaced for years, and now with this, it seems to make sense to replace those first. If we do that, we have been putting the new technology in with our new meters for the past many years. When we put the radio online, we will gain an instant 3,500 extra meters besides these 1,200, or 3,000 extra meters besides these 1,200. They've got the radio read technology, so we'll be over 55% of our meters will be radio read from the fixed base network. The other 45 will be radio read drive-by units, which we can then take a very good look at to see which ones are oldest to replace first and kind of work our way through that as needed to get us up to all radio reads. So this is only step one that we're asking for, and this is a complete turnkey operation. We would advertise with the residents to let them know this is coming. This company would then contact the residents, set up the appointments, change the meters, program the meters, help us program the software in the billing software, install a radio on the water tower, and I believe there's even for the first 5 years of hosting and servicing in their quote as well. So this is truly a turnkey operation. The only thing we would have to do is if there were problems or residents that did not want that meter change, we would actually go over there with them and, you know, basically work with them to get that meter changed out.
So how will that, would that work if you get that scenario that you just mentioned?
Most of the time, last resort is you shut their water off until they let you change the meter.
Have we done any of this yet?
We do, like if we get a bad reader or a known problem meter, we swap them out onesie twosie, but nothing of this scale.
And when you do that, do you ever, does it go smoothly usually, or do you get people?
Well, we have people that don't want their meters changed because they know, yeah. A lot of them know that as they get older, they read in their favor.
Yeah, no, that's what that.
And that we've had people that just, I don't want you in my house. And we're like,
right.
we're sorry, but we have to. And we've had where we've had a police escort.
Okay, that's why I was wondering how you do that if someone's being belligerent mm-hmm. about it.
And that usually takes a very long time. It's usually months to make that happen. You know, just we keep trying, and finally we just bring the police with us. It's not worth the hassle.
Any questions, Rusty? No. Matt, any questions?
No.
Chris?
So 3 to 5 months to get them switched out.
Yep.
And with that, I'm assuming, you know, the company, do they get recycle rights on the meters, rotten, old meters?
Not worth a whole heck of a lot. Some of these will even be plastic, so they're worth even less.
Okay. So that's it. How much time do we free up and recapture from
I'm figuring just with these, you'll be 25% more time for our meter guy, easily.
Okay.
And we, 1 week every 2 months for the walking route, easily. That's if everything goes right. I mm-hmm. do this with everything going right. The handheld units are so antiquated now, it's just, you know, it's, nothing ever goes right.
You know, with this, we free up 25%. Once we're, you know, you do the next step, at some point, it's...
At some point, you're probably going to save 50% of a person, so you can keep, instead of hiring, you can wait longer to hire.
That's my point.
We become much more efficient.
Yeah.
And we give the residents a much more accurate snapshot. Like final reads was a good one I put in my memo. Right now, Rebecca downstairs calls Pete and says, I have a final read at Canyon Trail. Pete's in Grand Reserve. Pete has to finish what he's doing. Go to Canyon Trail, get the final read, bring it to Rebecca, or call Rebecca before he goes on his day. And that happens, you know, 300 and sometimes a year. So there's going to be a tremendous savings right there.
So I saw the timing for implementation. What was the timing for to send it out to bid, get the contract, and then have...
As soon as it goes through you guys, that is approved.
And they don't have any issue with procurement of...
This is... Core and Main is the census... Is the census rep.
But they're available.
They are available to them now. There is no shortage anymore.
Good. Okay, I'm going to think out of the box here. And maybe I'm all wrong on this, but what if you offer people a little incentive to do it? Does that help?
90 to 5% of them, it'll be just a simple switch up. You won't have that many problems.
Okay. I was just thinking that if someone's like belligerent about them doing it, and yet, to the point where you have to come in with extra people to help you do it, I didn't know if there's anything, because sometimes a little incentive and then a little sugar and then they...
Or a gallon of water?
I don't know what it is. I wouldn't know where to begin on what you'd offer, but I just thought that maybe sometimes people will jump on something like that.
I don't think it'll be a problem.
Okay.
So problems will be few and far between. You've got multiple layers of enforcement.
And if we get 10 of those tough ones out of 1,000, that's I'm okay with that.
Some towns have, like Eric said, resorted to shutting off water.
Yeah.
You can, charge them extra, basically, for, you know, having an old meter. And then there's other methods,
okay.
too.
So, as well, that didn't work either. Maybe they turn it back on.
Sure. We have had that.
Okay. That was just something I thought that I didn't know of it.
Hopefully we won't need that, but good thought.
All right. We'll keep that in mind if it
yeah,
gets
absolutely.
If it rears its ugly head. Anybody else? Anything?
Okay, what do you see? That's a supermajority vote, right?
Correct.
So that should be on the regular. And is that going to go on this very next council meeting?
Yep.
Okay.
As long as you guys are okay with it, I mean.
Yeah. I guess we're all good with it, so. All right, PW 2024-99, Rob Roy Drainage District scope of work.
I know I've said this many times, but hopefully this is the last project with the Rob Roy Drainage District. They had asked to, if we could facilitate this contract for installation of HDPE pipe and some additional grading to make sure that it flows correctly to the pipe and into the ditch as compared to what it does now. Right now, there are many, many areas of this ditch that are still as they were in 1905 when it was dug. When they dug it out, they put it to the side, and that's where it sits. It was never truly graded or smoothed out in many locations, and this is looking to improve that and to create positive drainage in places where they now have standing water. With two bids that were done completely separately, being within 6%, I feel it's a very good price. It's very competitive, but it's over the $25,000 and was an RFP, so this would also be a supermajority vote. I will gladly answer any questions. I know it's a little a big contract for a big area.
I can go first because I know I talked a little bit with Bart about this one. That $500,000, that's money from the county, right?
Correct.
And so it goes away when?
End of this year. We have to work, like, December 20th, we're supposed to have everything basically done and into the county by the 30th.
And whatever's not spent
goes back to the county.
County general fund. So we're just the mechanism to spend the money.
Correct.
And then what happens going forward with, because I mean, I know Chris probably knows more about this drainage district stuff than even I do. It seems like for a lot of years they're nothing, right? And then it's now all of a sudden it's gotten active, and then what happens in the future of this?
Well, there are two things. One, it did go dormant for a long time. In 2014, the Farm Bureau reinstated all the drainage districts in the area here. And that's when it kind of got active again. So late 90s, early 2000s till then, there was absolutely nothing. So you're absolutely correct. Now they're trying to maintain it, and it was not maintained even before that. It was kind of dormant before the, 2000 era. Mm-hmm. So with what we just saw on our, one of our last agenda items, a lot of it will get developed, but this will also kind of preserve it and help it work correctly until then and even after that time.
So they will be collecting money from anybody that develops along there?
Only as it's been prescribed by either the judge or what is on the books already. I don't think there's any extra money that goes to the drainage district.
In the future?
It'll just be through their tax levy.
Well, they have the ability to tax.
Right, that's kind of where I was going with it.
There's a process in place because of the settlement that was put in place, but there is a mechanism for them to tax. They have yet to, for this one, yet to levy a tax, if I recall correctly.
Well, you're taxed on it now.
It's minimal. I think it's a dollar.
But it's what the judge said. That's
right.
All that was allowed.
It's okay. A very minimal because it's set by the judge for right now.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the terms are if that falls off, but it's very, very minimal because there were two categories. There was the residential that was developed, and then there's the rest of the land. So there's two categories on how they can do it. But yeah, this one, it's just they haven't needed to collect much of anything, but this is definitely what they're using right now to.
Because my concern is like, you get used
what
to,
happens after they spend this money?
Yeah, you get all this money to spend on this, and then going, it goes away.
I'll say what
are
I said
we
going
to have to spend money on it ourselves and out of our budget?
My comment is, it's private property. Maintain the property yourself. If you're a farmer or you're a landowner, it's your creek. You maintain it. I disagree with the drainage district, but we lost that fight years ago.
Yeah.
That's always been my position.
Yeah, I was thinking, Rusty.
In the packet, you kind of laid out a couple of options of what we might do, and one of them was putting on a hard cap. Like, what's the, you know, when completion date of this, if being like a December 30th, what happens if that mark is not met?
I think, honestly, working with the contractor before that, we would see that and pick a stopping point to meet that deadline, because I don't think we want to be on the hook for any of that money.
Yeah, it depends on the terms of the proposal and our termination ability and, you know, their status of the work. So it would have to be something tightly managed on our end to make sure that our out-of-pocket is zero or, you know, a negligible amount at that point. Because that's, we approve it, so technically we're on the hook for it, and if our revenue source goes away, I mean, theoretically we could be on the hook for that dollar amount. So, I mean, the good news is that, you know, all of this drainage district is within Yorkville city boundaries, so, and, you know, Yorkville is bigger than the drainage district, obviously, so we've got a cost being borne by the entire residents in that case, not just the drainage district, so that's the worst case scenario, but I would hope we would get there.
I was just curious what our option was.
Yeah, and I did call the contractor directly and said, hey, do you even think this is going to be a problem? And they're like, no, we don't think this is going to be a problem at all. We think we'll be in and out of there. With weather, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, too, I said, even with weather, he's like, we'll either figure it out or we'll pick a stopping point so we don't get to that point, because I don't want to be on the hook.
But with weather and that, you've got a month, not even a month with the holidays in here,
yep,
to get everything done. We have bad weather that turns. If they start the project and things have to terminate, it's no better than where we are right now with
right.
it, because if they start moving dirt, they start doing things, if they're not getting ground cover, I mean, and actually, they're going to scrape it, they're going to flatten it, but then they're going to put winter wheat. Winter wheat's not going to germinate now.
And that's kind of what my thought was with the winter wheat. We can drop that off, but I think they're going to start at the south end and work their way north and not kind of do everything at once. Maybe do it location by location.
Yeah, I mean, you start doing that, you're going to have an...
I don't want everything torn up.
Right, because right now, the ditch itself actually acts as a barrier from the farm fields, which are all tilled and turned over. You scrape that 20 feet all the way up and down, you have nothing that retains anything that comes off.
True. They're just taking the giant crown out, though.
What?
They're still leaving it with a swale backwards. And then they're going to swale it to the pipe. So there'll still be a ridge. So it's not going to just be a straight runoff into the ditch.
So if any of these funds are not expended, they go back to the county. Can we reapply to the county for that?
They have told us no. So they have said whatever amount of money that we return to them, they're just going to use for their own, you know, purposes with renovations. So
can the county then expend it themselves with the district? I mean, they're giving us.
They could theoretically, but they don't have the, they're going to run at the same time as rates we are. So the scenario is going to be, it's going to be mid-December, and we're going to button this thing up, send some money back, and then the county is just going to eat it into one of their projects that they're already doing.
Okay, so then the money that, say we just don't do this, we send back the money that's in there.
Yep.
They keep the money or they lose the money as well?
They're going to spend the money before the deadline. They're going to spend the money themselves on one of their own projects.
Yeah, their deadline, I believe, is it's December 31st, 2026. I think they set an arbitrary deadline for us a year ahead.
Yeah.
We don't do this, and they have a whole year.
Is that different?
Yeah, that's been end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
clarified.
Okay, so they lose it, so they have to spend it no matter what. They've just given it to us. So the date to lose the money is the same for both. I mean, the county board appoints the drainage district. Why not have funnel the money back to them and have them work out the terms?
Do that, Martin.
That's why it's here with you guys. Absolutely.
That's an option. If we just want to say no, I mean, that can be our answer.
And then if they want to do it, they can facilitate it. I mean, we're just a pass-through right now, right?
Yeah.
That's all we are.
That is correct.
And we get no financial benefit out of it. We're not getting an administrative fee or anything. So
yeah,
I've struggled with this one because we are a conduit spending money on our side for staff to manage, facilitate.
My sense is the finish line is in view. We should just, you know, push it across and then be done with it. So
the theory is if you okay the funding to do it
and they don't get the construction part, they can't do the rest, fill, you know, finish the construction part after the fact?
No, everything has to be.
But you've already taken care of the financials up front.
I don't want to pay somebody for work they haven't done.
We got to be able to cut the check before December 31st.
Yeah,
right.
So whatever they get done, say they get $100,000 done, not the full amount.
And that's the way it'll be. That's the way it'll be said to them, is that you guys start here, you finish this one, you finish this one, you finish this one, and you go along the way. It may not be the most efficient, but it's the way we're going to have to do it.
Okay. Matt.
Yep.
So this was a supermajority too, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So I'll put that on a regular. Is that next council meeting too then? I'm assuming it is.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. On to old business. Item one, PW 2024-93, ordinance amending the code of ordinances of the United City of Yorkville, Kendall County, Illinois, regarding on-street parking, Garden Street. Oh.
Yep, we put signs up allowing for parking for drop-off and pickup. We have had no complaints or kudos either way, so we figure that's a great thing. So now we just have to codify it so the police can enforce it.
What will happen when we get snow? They'll have to stay off of it, right, then?
Or well, that, then the snow parking goes in effect after 2 inches anyway, but, you know, it'll be just like any other. Okay. You know, when they park out on the street in Grand Reserve, it'll be the same way.
Okay. Rusty? Matt? Chris? Okay, so what do you need for this one, Bart?
City Council approval.
Okay. Yeah. Consent thing?
Yeah.
Consent, Matt?
I'm fine.
Okay, yeah, we'll put down. So. Any additional business? Anything, Matt?
I got nothing.
Okay. I'll meeting adjourned at, 6:52?
52.